Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And here with you after weekend one of the Autumn Internationals. We're in a brave new world. And I just want to say Elon Musk, Charlize Theron, Oscar Pistorius, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, A.B. de Villiers, Ernie Els, Charlene the Princess of Monaco, Ladysmith, Black Man Mambazo, C.J. Stander, your boys took a beating that was mostly self-inflicted.
Yeah. A mild sort of lesson.
Hashtag comeback 2018. I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Timothy.
That's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
We are Egg Chasers, and you can find us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, on Instagram and everywhere else. In fact, do we need to just hit pause and do this?
No, there's no need to pause it, Timothy, because we are, in fact, on YouTube as well today.
I should have known, because you've got your feet covered up with a... what did you call it?
Ming Campbell blanket. So, look, I'm a man who's very, very comfortable being naked. Very comfortable. So, I find it abhorrent that people criticise me so much when I'm in my own house, broadcasting from my own studio, and I happen to have no shoes and socks on. But they go mental about it.
Just imagine the reaction if you were naked.
Oh, yeah, quite.
Mate, if your cock and balls were out, it wouldn't be as offensive as if your feet were out.
Those feet.
Yeah.
Well, those feet are truly disgusting.
Because of the online trolls, I've got to sit here like an octogenarian ex-Lib Dem leader.
Right.
That's where we are.
Well, so on this podcast, we're obviously going to be talking about England's victory against South Africa. We're going to be talking about Ireland's victory in Chicago against Italy and Wales's win over Scotland in the inaugural Doddy Weir Cup. And we're going to be looking ahead to next week's games. There's a few other things that are going on as well. Some disturbances in the England camp and a bit of a lack of happiness over the new season and how it's going to affect players' incomes. But one place I want to start, it was one of my favourite moments of the weekend. James Haskell, a really good pundit, really like him.
I love him as a pundit, to be fair.
Yeah, I do.
Good player, good man, great pundit.
Amazing flanker.
Brilliant flanker. All-round top bloke.
Yeah.
Great gym goer. Good cookbooks. He had a bit of an issue.
Yeah, and I want to come to his defence on this one. So let's listen to it first. So this is after the game, and he's asked by Alex Payne on Sky Sports. Right, so what's going to be happening then?
Parents will sing song. Is it everyone into the ice bath? What will they be doing now?
I think you'll have a sing song. It's important to celebrate a victory, whether it was the prettiest thing in the world. I think you've got to get round with each other, ready to regroup next week.
Sorry, James, what?
Now, what happened there?
Oh, my God, just one more time.
Thing in the world. I think you've got to get round with each ready to regroup next week.
I love it so much.
I'm just trying to work out, what happened? Did it just distort on the sound?
No, and this is why I want to jump to his defence, because I've been there. On radio, this has happened to me before. And what it is that he's speaking into his little microphone, and what he's hearing isn't what he's saying in real time. He's getting a slight delay. I've got an amazing example of this just to highlight how hard it can be. This is a mate of mine who was on the radio for years and years. In fact, I think he still is somewhere in the UK. He's called Ed, And this is him live on the radio about 10 years ago, this was. But he was hearing a delayed feed in his own ears.
Great song.
Only 10 years ago. Long since I've heard that song. Just brilliant. Wilson Phillips and Hold On. Today's best music. Bourbon is B&B. Got a great song to play next. Basically, it's the best summer song of the year. It is a great tune. Former hit 40 UK number one. And I'll play that next. Yeah.
Wow. It's
Birmingham's B&B.
So it's easily done.
And Wilson Phillips as well.
I know, great. Well done. Oh my God, a song JB knows.
He said Wilson Phillips.
Oh, but, well done.
I remember it from Bridesmaids. Great film.
Great film. Also, I thought one more time, just to show a bit of solidarity with your mate James Haskell, JB.
Yeah.
Put those headphones in.
Okay. There you go.
So there's a little app I've found that you can recreate what... So before you have a pop at James Haskell...
That's right, so connecting up now.
So just count to... Oh, no, you do it. Count to 10, JB.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Oh, my God, you're really good.
This is...
So, no, JB,
this is horrible.
Tell me what your thoughts are on Tokic's win yesterday.
I can't do this. I genuinely can't do it.
Try.
Go on. Okay. Talk about the win. Talk about your opposite
number.
This
is so confusing.
You're doing it. I can't believe how well you're doing it.
So, yesterday we played against...
Oh, no. You need to stop now. This isn't on. You're actually doing it. Phil.
Oh, no. Don't ask me to do this.
We may have found a television genius. How is it not affecting you, JB?
Oh, you've got to remember, Tim, I don't listen to anyone.
Even yourself.
I don't listen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
It is horrible, though. I can tell
I
you
can't
that
do
much.
It.
Like you're if I was in a pressure situation and I had to talk, I can see why you get that horribly wrong.
Yeah,
I really can.
Because especially doing live TV is high pressure anyway.
God.
Doing anything like that live.
That's the biggest difference between radio and television. Is radio, you do like a bad link or whatever, and then you just go, oh, do you know what? That was rubbish. I'll do a better one in a minute.
Yeah.
Telly, it's like, right, you got a minute, go. It better be absolutely on the money.
Yeah.
It's do you like knocking rocks? What?
So,
I thought James Haskell had either been on the Twickenham Hospitality wine during the game before that, or he was in need of some urgent medical attention. So it's good that you've actually explained what was going on there, Tim.
Yeah, anyway, it is hard. And the one time it's happened to me is when I was... I've been doing an interview and it's gone out on the stadium sound system, so you're hearing yourself like a second late and it plays with your head. But JB, it didn't affect you at all.
Very good, mate.
Like I say, there is a certain advantage of not listening to anything.
Right, where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the game, the big game at Twickenham? Do we start with some of the other action?
Should we start with the very end of the England game?
I think that should be at the very, very end. Because actually, it's an interesting talking point, but I don't think it makes a big difference.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe let's head this off then, and we won't have a long conversation about it, because I think it has been it's been the biggest talking point in the wake of the game.
Yeah, single biggest focus after the
100%. Game. So let's chalk it off.
Well, okay, so there's no way I'm not having a long conversation about it, because I just know when we start talking, it will go that way.
Contentious tackling, it's going to go
that way, right? So there's two things, isn't there? Is this a act of foul play? Undoubtedly, yes. Does it make a difference to the game? No. Because it's sort of like the old MMA thing, which is don't leave it to the judges. If your game rests on Angus Gardner making a decision your way or not, and he doesn't go your way, you know, you've not done enough to win anyway. You know, why is that any more important than the missed kick by Pollard?
So I agree with that. But I was listening to a very good, it was an Economist podcast with James Comey, the FBI director, in the wake of the Hillary Trump issue, the election campaign, where he was getting blamed as the single point of failure by both sides.
Yes.
By both Trump supporters and Hillary supporters. And he was comparing it to football games, because it was during the World Cup when this came on. And he was saying fans will either, they will find a single point of failure, which in football, as with rugby, is either a penalty kick. It's either a missed opportunity, a failure by a goalkeeper, or a single bad refereeing decision. Mm. But people look for those single points of failure because it's much easier to blame one individual thing than look at the entirety of an 80-minute or 90-minute game and,
exactly,
and do some proper analysis. And the Springboks had multiple times, I think it was more than 10 times from what I read this morning, 10 times in England's 22, point-scoring opportunities where they coughed up the ball cheaply.
Exactly right.
Look at that rather than this single issue.
Oh, do you know what? That is vintage Phil right there. He brought in a reference from a complete out of left field, works perfectly, and hit the nail squarely on the head. Absolutely agree.
With that said, I am a bit surprised that it wasn't a penalty, at least a penalty.
It was 100% a penalty.
Given the way... And it's interesting, actually, because I've not seen a tackle quite like this analysed previously. So if we are going to focus on the tackle, the initial contact, there was no arms. That initial contact and all the stills, it was a shoulder forward. That's where the contact. Then, interestingly, after that, Owen does, once Esterhazen is spinning backwards, he does then bring his arms up. And I couldn't think of any other tackle that was similar to that. Normally you get the no arms, but the arms completely stay down. Or you get a big shot like David Halifanua on, I think it was Corey Allen a couple of years ago, where he put a big tackle in and Corey Allen was flying back before he had a chance to close his arms.
Yeah, and that was similar. I think the difference with Owen Farrell, and where I kind of can see what Angus Gardner was thinking, I was surprised it wasn't a penalty. I would put it down like 65-35 penalty, not penalty or let the boys play, that I would have expected. Yeah. I think one of the mitigating factors here is we've just come off the back of an incredibly pernickety European Cup couple of weeks, where the way it's been officiated in the Northern Hemisphere so far this season is really, really stringent. Whether you agree with that or don't, that's how it has been. Whereas Southern Hemisphere, I think, is probably a bit looser and hasn't caught up with that yet. And all we want is consistency, as we've said many, many times. But what I will say on the Owen Farrell tackle is actually when you look at the body position he was in, he was tackling Esterhazen in quite an awkward position where Owen Farrell wasn't stood square to him as he was tackling. He was stood like on a weird sort of 45-degree angle. So I don't think it was possible for Owen Farrell to have wrapped his right hand because Esterhazen, the point at which he came into him. And then I would say, and I think what the referee has seen is they bounced away from each other.
Yeah.
And Owen Farrell is moving his arms together.
Arms.
And I don't want to go on, but the one phrase I will say that I hate so much that was all over Twitter, an angry mob of people saying, "He led with his shoulder." Can we just end that as a phrase? Because every single tackle that has ever been made, every player leads with their shoulder.
Yeah, except for I used to play with a guy in school who was Chinese. He used to lead with his feet.
Wow.
Yeah. Playing football?
No, this was in rugby. Ooh. Quite an amazing thing to watch. now, yes, I agree with all that. His shot was reckless, you know, in the textbook definition, because it just was. The shoulder was low. And I actually think...
Shoulder was low?
Sorry, arm was low.
Arm was low.
Yeah. And I actually think this speaks to a wider issue with Owen Farrell, which is I think he is reckless. I think his defence is reckless. And for all the talk about what makes him a great leader, this, that and the other, 90% of his game is great. I think he has serious issues, almost like anger issues in defence. And this is why he misses tackles, because he's always looking for a big shot rather than just taking the guy down.
Well, yeah, on that one. So he actually... There was a relatively flat defensive line as Esterhazen came back carrying the ball. Owen Farrell shot but accelerated those three steps into it, which made it a more, I'll use the word reckless, so I'm not quite sure, but it took some control out of Farrell's side, but also created a dogleg in the line.
Yeah.
So it was, in terms of a defensive positioning, it was actually quite reckless. Because if he misses that tackle, there is then a massive dog leg and big gaps around him.
I think he loses his head.
It is interesting. What I would say is that people like Brian O'Driscoll were saying, that's fine. I mean, people that have played at the very highest level, there was a bunch of them as well, just going, what's all the fuss? This is, it was a big collision. He was wrapping his arms afterwards. There's a lot of people that were suggesting this should be cited. I don't know what law they're trying to apply to suggest there was a potential red card there. Maybe a penalty, yes.
It's definitely a penalty.
I can see a penalty.
Yeah, I can see.
There's no red card offence. No.
Probably on yours, Tib, I think two-thirds, one-third, penalty, no penalty.
Yeah.
For where I am. I probably would have given it a penalty, but I can see the argument both sides.
The more I look at it, the more I think there is just no legality in that tackle.
My point is, if you look at Twitter, you think that Owen Farrell needs to miss the rest of the autumn, according to some people.
But there is an easy way to fix that, isn't there? Don't look at Twitter.
Yeah. Well, I keep saying it. I'm going to start coming off a bit more.
Some of the stills as well. People saying proof that this is a red card tackle when it's a still, like any still of any action you can find a penalty worthy for
it. Which president was it that said, oh, there are lies, damn lies and statistics? You can always find something which backs up your argument.
Agreed.
Confirmation bias in action.
This question about Owen Farrell. Do you think that his negatives in defence outweigh his positives given the competition at 10?
No. I don't see his negatives in defence the way you see it. I think there's a narrative where you've been talking about Owen Farrell's defence at inside centre for some time, and so. But I don't think he's bad. I think he's a solid. No one's going to get easy yards down the 10 channel, like they would more so.
I just think if I was planning against England, I'd be baiting Owen Farrell to jump on the line.
Totally.
That wouldn't happen with Danny Cipriani or George Ford.
No, but what might happen
is slightly different. You'd have to run over them.
Which would be a lot easier.
Dwayne Vermaelen, if it was Ford or Cipriani in that 10 channel, then Vermaelen would have been running over him all day long.
Yeah, that
would have been there.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
So I think Owen Farrell, still for me, is still, if not the first name on the team sheet, he's one of the first names on the team sheet. Comfortably. So, having said we're not going to focus too much on it, we have focused quite a lot on that.
Yes, so
let's talk
on
about
that.
Some of the other stuff, because the start of this game, in particular the first half, South Africa was so utterly dominant and went in at half time with a 2-point lead, despite England having a reduced. They had Itoje, one of the best players on the pitch, in the sin bin for 10 minutes, and England during that phase came away with a 3-0 lead for that 10 minutes. Mm. So what exactly happened with South Africa having so much territory, so much possession, conceding very, very, very few penalties, England conceding loads of penalties, and yet South Africa couldn't quite capitalise on it?
You've said this before, and you put it beautifully, and I was watching yesterday, and your words were ringing in my head, where you said that sometimes when you go for the jugular, as South Africa did when Itoje was in the bin, kicked to the corner, tried for the rumble, ballsed up the line out. It's like a gambler chasing their losses.
Yeah, playing on tilt.
Playing on tilt, yeah. And that's exactly what happened, because maybe the second or the third time you think, hold on a minute, let's just take three. Let's get something out of this, because this is going to be a tight game.
Yeah.
We're at Twickenham in an international. And they didn't. They just. I think it was compound errors. They missing the first line out made it more likely they'd go for the second and the third and the fourth, and Malcolm Marks had an absolute shocker.
Yeah.
Of all the people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their line-out was definitely a contributing factor to the first half, getting all of that opportunity and not converting it.
Well, I'd say this, which is when I was watching the game, even when South Africa were going forward, I just felt like they were going to get turned over at some point or knock it on or... They just didn't have the composure. So they did all the hard work getting into dangerous positions.
Yes.
And then they just threw it away.
I'm not sure. Was there... I don't remember. I'm sure there must have been several, but I don't remember seeing a single jackal turnover for England
in the whole game.
I
don't remember that. I know South Africa had a ridiculously few amount.
Because they were getting over the game line so easily.
Well, they were getting up until the 22, like you just said there, Jade. From their own kind of 10-metre line up to... inside England's 22, they were just in tackles at will, making comfortable yards. And then as soon as they got into the 22, it's probably an element of kind of repeat mistakes and panicking, the playing on tilt side that you mentioned before, Tim. And I would give England some credit their defensive shift was poor outside the 22, but as soon as they got in the 22, England really switched on, and some of the players really stepped up, particularly the pack.
Yeah.
And I would also nod to Benny Teo, who so many people have mentioned, the 28 minutes of rugby.
Absolutely hammered someone.
He did it. He put in some big shots multiple times. Luke,
I think one of his best interventions was when England kicked it downfield. South Africa tried to play out, and you're thinking, there's a break on here, and just out of nowhere, Bento man and ball, bang.
Yeah.
It was very, 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 very good hit.
George Cruz was excellent. Mark Wilson was outstanding.
Mark Wilson was superb.
What happens with him, though, going forward? Does he move to seven?
So when Mercer came on, Curry went off, didn't he?
Yeah, he was injured.
And Wilson went to seven. So I think he's one of those who can genuinely play six, seven, and eight. So he's a brilliant option for a World Cup. If everyone's fit, he's not in the starting team, but he might sneak onto the bench because of the versatility.
Well, who is England starting seven though?
Curry.
And you think that he is the out? He should be the starting.
Well, he was in South Africa and he is now. So that's the way it's going. I'm all right with that. When you look at the balance, as we talked before, it's about balance. But in the back row, one person who I don't think covered themselves in much glory, comparatively, Brad Shields. I don't think he justified but it's early days and Eddie Jones has shown that he will stick with players and I'm sure he'll come good, but he has
Simon Harrison.
Yeah.
like Nick Azikwe. I've got more.
Big Luth.
Big Luth.
Bearing in mind how little rugby he's played this season, I don't think he justified the selection.
He's simply not the answer, is he?
So I actually thought, looking at Shields, I thought he had a solid game. I think the immediate thing that you will remember is the missed opportunity where he spilt the ball 5 metres away from South Africa's line. But taking that out of the equation, I thought he worked hard hitting rooks, making tackles, although he didn't have as good a game as someone like Wilson. Mm. But I didn't think he had a bad game at all.
So just a little interesting one. I interviewed John O'Ross in the Shark Tank for the Gallagher Cup game.
Yeah.
And I introduced John O'Ross as the best six in the Premiership. And his immediate retort was, what, Brad Shields? Which I found very, very amusing.
Oh, well, there's maybe a little insight right there.
Isn't there just? The worrying part of this performance for me, specifically for England, is that when they did break loose, it was from a little bit of genius from Owen Farrell. The little offload to, Slade, and then he offloaded again, and it looked really nice. England aren't creating chances through their systems, and the same goes for South Africa too. Now, South Africa are a little bit different to England because they are just so enormous. It seems to be that they can get away with sheer physicality. England aren't quite there.
Well,
they're not attacking well.
To be fair, they didn't. Well, it's not that they're not attacking well; it's that they weren't attacking for the majority of that game. They weren't trying.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, Ben Youngs's box kicking game was actually really good, but they weren't really trying and. When it did open up a little bit, they're not going to beat the All Blacks playing like that. They're going to have they're going to have to go for the jugular, try and score four or five tries to beat New Zealand.
Did you feel they looked like sort of similar teams, these two?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say, and the stats probably do bear that out. If you look at the back line and the forward line, in terms of player stats, they were broadly similar. The forwards didn't make many metres. They did big shifts defensively. The backs made some metres, but it was kind of sporadic and they didn't get too many opportunities.
You think like big carrying centre, you got Teo, you've got Diolande, you got a really exciting back three, both of them have.
Yeah.
And I just think South Africa are a better version, even though they lost, they are a better version of England. I think going forward, South Africa have got the potential to win the World Cup. In fact, I think a couple more months together until the World Cup, we're on 11 months now. Or on the 12-month countdown, they're going to be a formidable team. Well, I don't think England can do that.
Well, let's talk about England. So what changes would you make from the team that started against South Africa to the team that will start against New Zealand?
Of the available options Eddie has
to get? Yeah, of course.
Who's anyone in the back row that I can pick? Just give me the names.
You could pick Underhill to come in.
Yeah, him, done.
Ahead of Curry's?
No, ahead of Shields.
So you put a seven...
Or you could put Mercer to eight and Wilson at six.
Or you could put Mercer at six because he plays there with...
Or you could put Mercer at six.
Wilson starts.
Or you could bring Michael Rhodes in.
Curry starts.
you could bring
Rhodes, someone like Rhodes. I mean, basically, I'm just saying, I think Brad Shields shouldn't play the next test. That's what I'm saying. He's just not ready for it.
I think that they are missing, in terms of the balance of the back row, I think they are, and in terms of trying to develop that attacking play, which you're going to have to show against New Zealand, as well as putting in a lot of work, I think they are missing a bit of a link man. Something Rob Shaw provides, has provided for England over those years, is someone who can actually offload the ball and pop it into space, create space for other people, which I think you're going to need to do. So I would actually, I think they're a really industrious back row unit that were out there against South Africa. I think that will get found out against New Zealand. And for that reason, I might go Mercer into the back row.
Yeah. Some of the skills. And because you can get that link play from someone else. So someone like Mako Vunipola is actually surprisingly good. He's got very good hands and distributing. And Saracens use him well for that. So maybe someone like Jamie George coming in, who also has that bit of handling skill and bit of flair.
I think, you know, I'd start with Harry Williams rather than Sinclair.
I think Ben Moon's played himself into a start, 100%.
Yeah. This he did shore up.
And also, when you bring on those other boys, Hepburn and Sinclair later on, they just make bigger impacts. I think they've got it the wrong way around there. Other than that, I think I'd keep everything the same. How do you change it?
So it was interesting watching. So if you look at the four tests, the England's attacking performance was best in test one and two. Mm. They scored way more points, and certainly in the first half an hour or first half of those two tests, they were almost scoring tries at will. They were really free flowing, and I put that down probably to the having the Ford Farrell access to get the best of the guys outside them. But they also, in those tests, conceded far more points. So do you go for a more solid position, which is the kind of Farrell at 10 with probably Tio and Slade, or do you go for, no, as you said before, against New Zealand, we know we're going to have to score more points, so do we go for the Ford Farrell access?
I think they're going to try and draw him into an arm wrestle. Well, I think that's the way they're going to go.
That is how South Africa beat them. South Africa brought them into an arm wrestle and then took every opportunity they had. Every half chance to score, South Africa took them. That's how they beat them in the Rugby Championship.
For that, I wonder. So one other area, I'd keep everything the same except I'd probably change one in the back row, maybe Mercer for Shields. What I would do in the back line is consider Mike Brown in that back three.
Yeah.
I think they really missed him.
I think going forward, Daly adds more. I think positionally and territory-wise, because especially in that first half where South Africa had so much possession and territory, part of it was down to the easy meters they made through the middle with their big runners, and part of it was down to some very intelligent kicking by Pollard to exploit the space that Daly, being a yard to one side when he should be a yard to the other, allowed him.
Yes. Well, I can't see many changes coming. I think they'd probably be wise to stick as it is.
I don't think there will be many changes. I think
apparently Manu will be fit for New Zealand, though.
Well, fit to get selected for New Zealand until he then pulls out 2 days before.
Death, taxes, and Manu Tuilagi's groin having a strain.
Poor.
Yeah. We've said it so many times. So many coaches have relied on Manu and it's failed. England are in an unusual position where they have a near like-for-like replacement in Ben Teo. There's not many teams that have got that. I mean, in terms of try to think of like-for-like centres in the world, maybe Laumapi,
yeah,
New Zealand.
Dialande definitely
is a good carrier.
Oh, the French fella as well.
Bastereau.
Different level, mate.
different gravy.
Different gravy there. no, what's his name? Oh, Stade-Français centre.
Oh, yeah, Jonathan Danty.
Yeah. Of course, Brad Barrett, who would be my starter every day of the week.
He's not quite like for like.
He can do the hard yards. He's probably got better distribution, and his defence is magnificent.
I think we should praise England for having a lot of dog. We should also be under no illusions that that was a game South Africa lost more than England won.
Yes, I
would say so. Although it was encouraging to see the turnaround in England first half to second half.
Yeah.
Their first half performance, Ollie Poole on our Fantasy Rugby Draft group, WhatsApp group, said it, and it was exactly what I was thinking, which was that first half was so reminiscent of the Wasps-Leinster game a few weeks ago, where I think it was only one or possibly two tries to nil at half-time, and Wasps were very much still in it. But then the floodgates just opened because Wasps had been absolutely destroyed. They've been exhausted by that constant Leinster barrage. I thought that was going to happen to England. And if England hadn't changed at half-time, it would have done.
And that did happen in those first two tests in South Africa as well, in the second half, as you mentioned. But I suppose the difference is that they were altitude. And maybe we have seen in the last two games against South Africa that actually altitude was a really big factor in those two defeats. But
Possibly.
Anyway, let us know what you think at Rugby Podcast. Tweet. Get into the Twitter cesspit.
Yeah. Tell me this, Tim. Did you work this weekend?
No.
Have you not done any Gallagher Cup?
None.
Well, I went to a Gallagher Cup game.
The Premiership Rugby Cup.
Or whatever it is.
The draw.
Yes.
15-15 draw.
It's the 15-15 draw. So one real thing of note, and I can't say his name, someone's going to have to help me. Joel
Kapoku
is a monster.
He's a big boy, isn't he?
He is bloody enormous. Like, he is enormous. That is my scouting report done.
Like, and I
he's already too good for the level that he's playing at.
Some bona fide journalism right here. As a second source, JB, I can confirm from seeing him last weekend, Joel Kapoku is a monster.
Oh my word. Saracens are gifted at lock. I mean, if this boy continues to improve...
He's got a twin brother as well, Jonathan.
No!
Jonathan.
And what's he doing with himself?
He's in the Saracens Academy.
Is he?
Oh, wow.
Hang on, so he must be the same age, obviously. He's a twin.
Same age,
So, like, what position?
He's lock as well.
Well, yeah, if he's going to be a twin... So, Kapoku is listed at...
I hope it's not like the Warburtons.
He's listed at 6'6" and 126 kg. So, 19 and a half stone.
Yeah.
19 years of age.
So I thought 19, he was going to be a little bit more of a build, like a bit more of a plodder, and he's not. He's
not quite the athletic sprinter that some of these locks are. He is a bit more in the old school mold, actually.
Well, if you're that big,
So
one to watch.
Yeah, coming to a European match near you soon. and the other thing I'm going to mention as well is I got to meet Sale's new fly half and interview him as well. He's on loan. Rob Dupria, who again is another enormous man. Like, I met him, I didn't realise it was a fly half. I thought he was like a number six, big boy. Now I'm sure he's probably only listed at like 6'2" or something, but it felt like he's about 6'4".
Is he the one whose brother? Because he played for the Sharks in South Africa.
Yeah.
Whose brother's a back row?
He's got twin. Hang on. Now, did he say he has twin brothers or it is his twin brother? I'm not sure.
Okay.
So, but it's one of the two, yeah. He is a big lad.
Yeah.
So,
did he play? No.
No, he was just... He literally landed that day, was wandering around the ground. We interviewed him in the shark tank. So, that was all good fun.
There you go. Shall we touch on some of the other autumn internationals?
Yeah.
Don't want to talk about Gallagher Cup?
No.
Okay. I've not seen much of it. I've kind of seen a few of the squads, but let's focus on autumn internationals.
Are you sure that's what the people want?
Which one? Let's go to the Principality Stadium.
Yeah. So, this is 21-10, Wales versus Scotland.
Yeah.
It's interesting teams. So, all of the players who play in their respective nations were available.
Yep.
And the handful that play for each who don't play in their respective nations, so the likes of Finn Russell, for example, Greg Laidlaw, weren't available. And it was, from what I've seen, because I was watching the England game, from what I've seen, it seemed like a comfortable, in the end, Wales win with a couple of good tries. The North and Davis try were both very, very well taken. And that seems like two guys who have had injury issues over the past couple of years. But they both brilliantly finished. George North ran through about three or four players. And Jonathan Davies, if there's any debate over the Davies-Hugh Jones
who's the better outside centre.
It's over.
That was a big mark for Jonathan Davis. He took an inside then outside line, fend, gas the 30 metres.
Wales
under the post.
Very, very, very good. Now you boys are going to talk among yourselves.
Do we need to? I was going to say, do we need to pause? What's going on?
No, I'm going to get Georgia. You guys.
James getting it. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. The one thing from this game I want to mention had nothing to do with the game itself. The absolutely mind-blowing courageousness that Doddy Weir continues to show.
Love it.
To confront these sort of situations every single time with the same optimism and positivity when faced with a terminal illness that there is no cure for, it's absolutely mind-blowing. The guy is incredible.
He's a legend, isn't he?
He really...
He's superb.
He's a better man than I am, or frankly anyone I know is, to the way he's conducted himself and dealt with it, and rightly taking centre stage and still cracking jokes and everything. I don't want to sound patronising when I say that, but it's pretty mesmerising, the bloke that he is.
Yeah, he is sensational, and that it is. The Doddy Weir story is bigger than rugby as well. It's incredible inspiration.
Just back to this game. Do you actually think it was worth playing in the end? After all,
Wales made over £2 million and Scotland made £1 million, so yeah, totally worth it.
Yeah, I was chatting to some gents who talk about Scottish rugby, and they made basically the same point, which is that Scotland have got a lot of big name players who are out of contract towards the end of the year. This game alone could probably keep a couple of those players
in Scotland.
Yeah.
Well, so, great. Well, view, good. Let's have more of them then. Have one every week.
That's a great idea. Well, how
get rid of the Pro 14 and just have Wales v Scotland.
So how many games would they need? They need a squad of 23 internationals a year.
Yeah,
big contracts.
£1 million a game. £1 million contract.
No, I'm not. I'm not having that. Let's at least. I understand money is important and you've got to pay wages and all the rest of it. But let's not like be so one-eyed that just because you're Scottish or you're a Scotland fan, you start to justify this away as something which is great. It's a farce that this game's been played.
Yeah, look, it should have been against different
should
opposition.
Never. Yeah, should never have happened. But fine, it has. Great, good. You've made some cash. Well done. We've maybe learnt a couple things about this side. One thing we did learn is Wales' defence is immense.
Yeah, well, they are. I mean, they're very understated team, Wales, which is weird for, you know, that like that country, which is either, you know, at the precipice of greatness or, you know, deep in a valley of sorrow somewhere. But no, they look really good. They're rounding nicely. They've got an underrated back row, which consists of a Lion in Tipperick, who they don't even talk about anymore because they've got such riches at back row.
He was so good.
You know, so I kind of think if you want something done occasionally very, very well, but you also want it done in a very fragile manner, Wales are your team, because occasionally they are absolutely amazing, but I just don't think there's any substance to it. I think they'd fold against, kind of like they did in Six Nations against England. They don't have, I don't know, it's that sort of grit.
Well, yeah, but hold on, that was a Scotland team that what we've seen of them in the last couple of years is a real willingness and ability to attack from anywhere.
Yes,
and
agreed.
They did not break Wales down at all.
Yeah. I kind of think that once you get on top of Wales, you really get on top of them. Like, I don't think they're going to do many narrow losses, let's put it that way.
Well, even think about the Wales-Scotland game in the Six Nations earlier in the year, and Scotland carved them up on a few occasions, and they didn't get... I mean, the Welsh red wall in defence is looking mighty good.
And it is an impressive sight in the Millennium Stadium too.
Principality.
I mean, oh, of course.
Yeah. But we should have more people getting banned from drinking.
Oh, yes, have you heard the story?
I know, it's
outrage.
Crazy. What?
Outrage-ometer. Outrage bell.
That should be the outrage bell from now on.
Yeah, the outrage bell.
So this one has passed me by. Go on.
So the Principality Stadium have opened up a section of seats, 4,000, which are teetotal. Fine. If you want to do that, fine. But let's not make a bigger story out of this. So the narrative is there's too many people drinking in rugby games, and then you find somehow they've found these morons to just talk as if they're under threat. So there's some person I've quoted in the Times which said that they want to go to rugby with their family, but they want a welcoming and safe environment.
Yeah, I can read the quote to you if you want.
Oh, please.
I don't think the ban goes far enough. I'd like to see every rugby ground introduce alcohol-free sections where it's safe and welcoming for families especially.
I hate these people. I hate them with all my heart.
Have you ever not felt safe and welcome in a rugby game?
I would sooner ban kids stadium. From rugby stadiums than ban alcohol.
Let's just remember, this is a sport where you are as likely to sit next to someone who supports the opposition as you are a child or whatever at a game. And all I've ever known is the amazing thing about rugby clubs and rugby crowds is they do drink a lot. Absolutely. Yep. And you talk about wanting to make money. Man alive, you'll need a whole lot more Wales v Scotland games if you want to get rid of alcohol. Yeah. But no matter how much people enjoy, quote unquote, their afternoon, and a lot of them do, quote unquote, enjoy it a lot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's always well-spirited and...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Highly spirited,
but it never seems to... Well, I'm sure it can, so not... It seems to not cross a line.
Yeah, look, you've got 80,000 people watching the game. A lot of people go to Cardiff just to watch the game in Cardiff without going to the game. There will be an idiot somewhere. Of course, something will happen.
It's like lowering the tackle height means there will be a concussion occasionally. You can't get rid of them.
The worst part is they've given... Like, if you want to have an alcohol-free section in the Millennium Stadium, fine, okay, because maybe you do want to take your kids somewhere. If you're not a drinker and, you know, for whatever reason it is, you want an alcohol-free... You know, that's absolutely fine. What I hate with a passion is this person who gave that quote, who somehow... I mean... A safe and welcoming environment.
I know.
It's all safe. It's all welcoming. Just say you don't want to see alcohol. That's fine.
I've never gone to a rugby stadium that's not been a welcoming atmosphere.
Yeah.
Whether you're in with home fans or away fans or everyone's completely mixed and integrated together, it's always safe and welcoming. You compare that. So I've been to many Premier League football games, and there's no drinking. You can't drink within view of the seat. The away fans are segregated with fences and police cordons,
of course.
And you, if you watch the away fans in football games and the home fans around them, I remember watching it was Man City Chelsea a couple of years ago, and there was half of the away fans didn't even look at the game. They spent the whole game
do you know the
taunting and jeering, like sticking two fingers up at the Man City fans who were doing exactly the same back to them.
Not to get too sanctimonious about football, but are you aware of the concept of a bubble game?
A bubble game?
Do you know the concept of a bubble game? Bubble game is, if you're going away...
Sounds like something you'd search on an exotic website.
Tim. A bubble game is, if you are going to support your team, say Chester and Wrexham do it, I think, right? You have to go to Chester, get on the bus to go to Wrexham, and then you're not allowed to come out of the Wrexham stadium,
yeah.
You've got to get back in
the bus.
Oh, they
do it. Burnley v Blackburn,
Burnley
they do that.
Yeah. Is another one. And Burnley Blackburn, I used to be a season ticket holder at Blackburn, but that is another story altogether.
Did you?
Wow. Yeah. What? What?
Yeah. That's a different story.
give us the abridged version. Come on. How did you become a Blackburn season ticket holder?
I've moved on that portion of my life. they actually park the buses like nose, like end to end, nose to nose. So the buses are what actually separates the fans. So yeah. In the end, you get bottles flying over and all sorts of stuff. So maybe take your kids to that.
Yeah,
and then come back to a rugby game and appreciate the self and safe and welcoming environment you have.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing we can learn from football is there are football banning orders. I would like to have a rugby banning order for that person. That's what I like.
I bet he was putting pressure on the Waitrose magazine editor to stand down.
Can I just point? Yeah, there is a slight distinction here. The article is actually reporting. It's a worthwhile thing to do, is to report about the ban of alcohol. The thing which I'm referring to, my anger, is the person who gave that quote. That's the real villain here. So anyway, so if you don't want to drink... Oh, and here's the hilarious consequence of it. They only managed to sell half of the seats.
For the non-alcohol area?
Yeah, or less than half.
Well, I'm all for this then, because you might get some cheap tickets.
Oh,
yeah.
Late
How
doors.
How furious would you be if you went to rugby... An international. Hey Tim, I've got a ticket, and we all, we get on the train, we get there, alcohol-free section. You punch me in the face.
No, we're leaving. We'll go and watch it in the pub.
I mean, that is a genuine way to start violence, in a game,
and legitimate.
Yeah,
that is legitimate violence.
My friend Tim punched me in the face because I made him go to a rugby game, and he couldn't have a beer. And I would take that. I'd take it.
Other results.
Well, so is there anything else we want to say on the Wales, Scotland? Adam Hastings has been great this season, but it's more than that. No, I want to credit Wales' defence more than saying it was a deficiency in Scotland.
They had two disallowed tries, Scotland. One of them was an absolutely magnificent attempt, and any other day they could have easily have scored that, which is the kick over. I love that. So they must have been playing a penalty advantage to
go for it.
But it's like a little Danny Kerr stabby kick. Two Scotland players go for the ball. In real time, it looks like a try. Even in slow motion, I think I'm pretty tempted to give the try. I can see why it wasn't, though. The scoreline does skew towards Wales. Obviously, they won, but it could have been a very different game, actually.
Yeah.
George North scored another try as well.
Oh, yeah.
He's well and truly back.
Yes.
Isn't he just... It's good to see.
It is. Very good. Moving on to other results. So I'll just quickly run through a couple. Japan beat New Zealand lost to New Zealand 31-69. Despite scoring first and scoring a couple of very nice tries, Japan, New Zealand had way, way too much. Way too much with New Zealand second team. Kenya played Romania. Now, this is of interest to us.
Right, so let me get this right. Kenya, sevens experts.
So the repechage has begun?
No. This is a pre-repechage warm-up game for Kenya.
So the final World Cup place is going to be awarded to one of the sides in a round-robin tournament in Marseille over three weekends, starting on the 10th?
It starts on the 11th.
On the 11th.
So next weekend.
Next weekend, there'll be a round-robin of games. You'd think the favourites for it will be Kenya and probably the overwhelming favourites.
Canada will be most likely. Canada, the one who've got the best history of World Cups.
But Kenya could give them an upset.
Well, it'd be interesting to see. So Kenya played in Romania against Romania A, so not a full Romania team.
I'm not liking where this is going.
And Kenya lost 36-5 to Romania.
Okay, all right, it's Canada's to lose.
So it doesn't look especially good. I don't know anything about the game other than that scoreline.
Well, Kenya are great at sevens, but...
Yes.
It's a lot of red cards.
So other than that, we had USA versus Maori All Blacks, which despite the Maori All Blacks having, I think it was three yellow cards, including one for a... wrestling style,
seen it.
Wrestling style body slam, rock or stone cold style body slam. Sort of three yellow cards. They still won by 40 points and very comfortable.
And was this the USA ones?
This was USA first team. Although looking at the team, there's not many players at all that I recognise. Probably because most of them will be contracted in Europe.
Well, I mean, their most important player is out for maybe 4 or 5 more weeks yet.
Who's that?
AJ. So he's going to miss all of the autumn, obviously. He's just out of the sling, and probably a little bit more after that, too.
Well, fortunately for them, they have qualified for the World Cup.
Yeah. Oh, and just one more AJ fact for you, Phil. One personal note for you.
Yeah.
Sedgley Park defence coach now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Interesting. Good gig.
Great gig. One of the prime jobs in all of rugby.
Absolutely.
Shall we?
And then the other game that is definitely worth touching on is Ireland in Italy. So the other game in
before
Chicago.
Before that, also worth mentioning, Jersey beating London Irish.
Did they?
In the championship.
How did London Scottish go?
Didn't play. This is making up for a game that was cancelled earlier in the season. So it was
that
a rest.
Makes it more interesting.
So, yeah, London Irish have lost to Jersey, which does open things up somewhat. Jersey have got a big pack. They're a decent side. But, yeah, we'll get into Ireland, Italy in a moment after I've just reminded you of our wonderful friends at Cornerstone and the brilliant offer they have to deliver to you some mail order razors that are precision engineered in German factories. And you know how precise they are to an incredibly high specification. We absolutely love them and we recommend them to you. And because you listen to us, and only because you listen to us, you get a really, really cool offer. We've been friends with Cornerstone for a long, long time. And so they want to make sure you can get to try what they've got with no obligation, but we think you want to carry on, and for less than the cost of a pint, probably about half the cost of a pint at Twickenham. £4 it costs you to get 6 razors in a presentation box and with a free aluminium engraved weighty shaft with your initials on. So get involved, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Egg10 checkout.
There you go.
Now, would anyone be interested, before we go into the Ireland-Italy game, to find out what it's been like in Pennyhill Park this week?
Yeah.
Well, that's fortunate, because down the line, we've got rugby aficionado and host of the England 02 Inside Line podcast, a certain one, Vernon Kay.
I wouldn't say I'm an aficionado, but I'm learning. I'm getting there.
paint a picture. Where are you right now? You could be anywhere.
Yeah, well, ideally, I'd like to say that I'm on a beach in Hawaii, but I'm not. I'm actually in, I'm at Pennyhill Park, and I'm in the gym. I'm where the magic happens. So around me, I'm just surrounded by gym equipment that the England boys use. And the best thing about this gym is it doesn't smell like a gym. It smells quite fresh.
I bet there's some serious amount of weight plates knocking around, though.
Boys... there's a lot of tin. I mean, I'm just going to walk up to the dumbbells, and I think the heaviest dumbbell that we've got in the England camp, I think it's 85 kgs.
Wow.
What?
75. Yeah, 75 kgs. And I've been fortunate enough to be in the gym and witness Joe Marler doing several dumbbell presses with the 75s, because he was a beast when he played for England. I mean, he's still a beast, isn't he? He's a monster.
Yeah, he's certainly a big lad. Vern, I was just wondering, I'm not sure if you've got the best job or the worst job, because I imagine if England had have lost yesterday, your day-to-day would be a lot less comfortable than it currently is.
Yeah, I've experienced the highs and the lows with the England team. You know, when you, especially in the O2 Blue Room after a game, when we've lost, unfortunately, they come in, and those interviews are a lot shorter than the ones that we do after a victory, because you can really get a sense that the guys just don't want to be there. Obviously, they've lost. All the hard work in the week hasn't paid off. And I think it's more of a period of recollection, I guess, when the team lose. But at the moment, everyone seems in good spirits. We spent some time with Jack Noel and Mark Wilson this morning. Obviously, Mark had a standout performance yesterday against South Africa. Everyone's in a buoyant mood. Their families are here as well, which is good. It means they're not getting homesick and they're not missing out on daddy duty, because some of the lads have got young kids. I think it's that realm that we all think that we like to live in as a professional sportsman. Is the highs and lows of sport are what makes it so compelling for us mere mortals to watch and consume and just enjoy.
Vernon, you're also in a dead privileged position. You can get a little bit of gossip and behind-the-scenes chatter. I would love to know, so I'm going to ask you if you know, what song Zach Mercer sang after making his debut. You have any idea?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. But from past experience of the tunes that the guys have sang and performed, it can't be that good. because they've had some absolute shockers from, I think, Christina Aguilera. We've had Justin Bieber. We've had, obviously, Elvis is up there as well. Your go-to favourites. But I'll find out, actually.
Yeah.
I'll find that out, because that's a good question.
He's a young lad, so he might be going down the Drake route or something like that. But
I think he might go down that way, because AJ... Anthony and JJ, they're into the Drake and all that kind of hip-hop stuff. So you never know, it might have rubbed off on him.
Now, on the O2 Inside Line podcast, which is out this week, am I right in thinking you've got Mort Wilson and Jack Nowell?
Oh, just mentioned you were chatting to them. That's for the podcast then, was it, Vernon?
Yeah, it was just after them. And they're all in really good spirits. You know, obviously, a few bruises, a few achy bodies, but... I think getting that victory against a team that beat us twice in summer was a real a good test, but also a great way to kick off these Quilter internationals.
Now, just tell me, how was Mort Wilson this morning?
He's good. He was good, honest. To be honest with you, he was really, really good. He was upbeat. He had a smile on his face because we chatted him after the game in the O2 Blue Room, and I think it was kind of... rabbit in the headlights as to, you know, he just had a game of his life pretty much on his first start at Twickenham. Only his, I think it was his fifth, was it his fifth international cap? But he was over the moon this morning. I think he had time to sink in. He got a bottle of champagne for being man of the match, but it's not been opened, which is good news.
Well, that's debatable.
I think you'll save it for the end.
So... I want to know what it's like having that having that showdown with Eddie Jones. He's he can be in a brilliant way belligerent. He's very much his own man. He shoots from the hip, says exactly what he thinks, and you're quite often having those head to head one to ones. What's he like?
Yeah, well, I have those kind of. I get him in a really relaxed environment because like we said at the beginning, a rugby aficionado. I don't really know the rules of the breakdown and the complexities of the beautiful game of rugby. But we had a really good chat where he actually opened up and we got a real insight into Eddie the man as opposed to Eddie the rugby coach. And once you realise what kind of person he is off the field and the way that he's been brought up and, his parenthood and that kind of stuff, you realise that he's actually a top bloke. And the way he commits himself to achieve a target and a goal, I don't think I've witnessed that with any other sports manager that I've been fortunate enough to meet. I think, you know, people say this, that and the other about the previous Six Nations that we had. Mm. But it's all about setting his targets and setting his goals towards the World Cup next year in Japan. And I think he's on track. And he's got a good team around him. And we all know that he runs the lads ragged. But there's a reason why he does that. Because, you know, in the past, England have tapered in the last 15, 20 minutes. But now, with everything that Eddie's doing, we're pretty much the same team at the end as we are at the beginning. You know, they're fit as a butcher's dog. I think once you sit down with Eddie and you realise what kind of bloke he is, I walked out the interview, the podcast that we did with Eddie, I felt $1 million.
Really?
I really did, yeah. Mm. He made me feel $1 million.
Now,
and I thought, do you know what? I feel really motivated. And we haven't spoken anything specifically about me. We just talked about the way he carries himself and the way he sets his targets and his goals and the way he initiates everything. And I thought, bloody hell, I feel great. You know what I mean?
Very quickly, before we go, Vernon, do you know what Will Carling did?
Well, if knowing Will Carling as well as I know Will Carling, it could be bloody anything.
Just getting the beers in.
Do you know what? He's got short arms and deep pockets. Not a chance.
I think that's a beautiful note to leave it on. Vernon, it's a great insight and a heads up for our listeners. They should definitely go and check out O2 Inside Line to hear more from behind the scenes with the England camp as they prepare for New Zealand, the world champs.
Yeah, so, I can't wait. My brother-in-law's a Kiwi and he's going to get absolutely battered if we beat him.
Come on.
Cheers, chaps. All the best.
That was cool.
And one more thing. Here is just a little extract from... The O2 England Inside Line podcast, which is excellent. This is you won't find this anywhere else.
Always remember meeting a veteran coach when I was just starting out, and he said coaching's like a piece of string. There's no end to it, and the better you get, and the more success you are, the harder it is. And that's what it's like. Like I was having a conversation with a couple of our coaches the other day, and they said, "Oh, we're busy." I said, well, you're busy. You never stop being busy. Like, you don't get to the top and then
take a break.
Rest, because there's no such thing, you know, because someone else is climbing up the hill chasing you. So all the time, the more you do, the more there is to do. And that's the love of coaching. You've got to love doing it.
Excellent. You can find the rest of that on the England Rugby podcast, which he referenced earlier. I love that clip because it just gives you a real insight to how hard they work. And for all the things I have said, and I have said many things, those England coaches do work bloody hard.
Coaching's like a piece of string.
Because it doesn't have an end.
It never ends.
It is. Although,
which is factually incorrect, isn't it?
On both counts, I think. a string, piece of string does have an end, generally. Unless you loop it round.
The finite string. Who knows?
Then it wouldn't be a string, then it would be a band.
Yes. I guess you could tie it
So actually...
He should have said coaching is like a Mobius strip because it doesn't have an end.
Yes.
Mobius strip.
What's that?
So if you cut a piece of paper into a strip and then twist it once and connect the ends together, it creates a three-dimensional shape that has only a single side.
Wow. Wow. If that sounded sarcastic, it wasn't. It was genuinely, wow.
But even that would be an incorrect analogy because his coaching time will end at some point.
Maybe he meant coaching's like string theory.
Oh, interesting. Go on.
Well, isn't string theory basically the theory of infinite universes? It goes on forever.
Well, I think string theory is a way of trying to understand the link between the theory of relativity and quantum mechanics.
That is correct.
Although I'm not sure if it's correct, but
yeah, it's like the infinite. The infinite monkey cage thing, which is, you know, there are so many different universes that somewhere a monkey has by accident typed out all the words for Shakespeare.
Yes. Is that a multiverse type theory?
Yeah, string theory.
Okay.
There you go. Eddie Jones, coaching is like string theory.
And the other thing he said, I'm sure I've seen it on a picture in the gym with like a jetty going out into a lake. You know, when you're climbing, keep climbing the mountain because there's always someone chasing you.
Oh my word! If there is a hashtag that I want to get started, right? I want people to send me pictures of inscriptions on gym walls,
inspirational quotes on gym walls.
That weird little font.
Mate, get out of the Twitter cesspit and get on Instagram.
Oh
yeah,
it's full of it. Especially Monday morning, hashtag Monday motivation.
Oh my God, I am going to introduce you to the mind coach Jordan Groves at some point, Tim. You're going to love it.
Sounds good. Sounds right up my street.
Mind coach.
Well,
there you go.
Shall we preview next week's game?
No. Shall we just go giddy at the knees and, you know, have some impure thoughts about the hot stepping ability of Jordan Lama?
Oh
yes,
my God.
I can't believe I missed that.
Some of his stepping is incredible, uncontrollable, unpredictable. It's amazing.
He has got the step, not maybe quite there with Jason Robinson, but it's not far away.
No.
But the difference is that top-end speed.
He glides a little bit more as he does it.
Yeah.
Like, Jason Robinson is quite abrupt.
Yes.
Abrupt changes. Lama appears to... He does all the stepping, but it appears more of a graceful glide.
He's so good, people don't talk about Jacob Stockdale.
Stockers.
I mean, that's how good he is.
Well, if he's scoring a hat-trick and Stockers didn't even get on the score sheet, then why are we bothering to talk? Who's Stockdale?
Exactly.
This game, which... I mean, great, it's spreading the game in the USA. It's a shame it was such a one-sided match from a spectacle point of view. But what it highlighted above all is the guys that really stood up and looked really good for Ireland are their backup players.
Yeah.
Tadhg Byrne probably won't be starting at lock, but wow.
Yeah.
Jordan Lama probably won't be starting in the back three, but wow.
Now, do these boys have the All Blacks at some point this year?
Yeah, in 2 weeks' time.
Oh,
New Zealand are using England as a warm-up for Ireland.
This is
the sad truth of the matter.
So, here's a question for you. If the World Cup was tomorrow, right? No. Let's keep the World Cup exactly where it is. With the teams as they are building into it, is this the most competitive World Cup we've had ever? Because England, you know, they beat South Africa. I expect South Africa to be maybe second favourites. Ireland. Oh no, hang on. Ireland are going to be second favourites.
Ireland will be second favourites.
But I think South Africa could beat anyone.
Well, South Africa have beaten New Zealand in New Zealand.
Yeah. Then there's New Zealand, the finely tuned machine.
The answer, I think, is not ever, no. But certainly, certainly it'll be more competitive than 2015.
Yeah. I mean, which World Cup's had more legitimate teams that could win it?
2007.
Which is, well, South Africa?
England made the final.
Yeah.
France, who beat New Zealand and then lost to England. England only just scraped past what was a strong Australia team at the time. Perhaps Ireland weren't quite as good as they are now then, but...
I remember the 91 World Cup, which was in England, being... Like, there actually being maybe half a dozen teams that were all kind of much of a muchness. England only just narrowly beat France. Australia only very narrowly beat New Zealand.
Because Wales and Scotland have rounded up. I mean, Scotland are immeasurably better than they were last World Cup.
Well, we're going to arguably the best performing of the home nations last time.
And we're going to find out over the next 2 weeks just what that gap, if any, is between New Zealand and the Six Nations side.
New Zealand, England, which I think it will be a considerable gap. And New Zealand, Ireland, which
the
I think
caveat
will be close.
There needs to be, this is the end of the Southern Hemisphere season. So I don't know whether you take that to be.
Is that positive?
They're together a lot, or the Northern Hemisphere sides are fresher. You could look at it either way, but that game in it's such a shame for me as an England fan that game in Dublin is the highlight. But that's the one I'm even looking forward to more than anything.
Well,
else.
The other thing we have not really spoke about is what about France? Because last time we saw them, they were ridiculously powerful, and they've got so much young talent now, particularly at scrum half. I mean, if they come good.
Wow. Yeah. France are, for me, a completely unknown quantity. So they do play South Africa next week, which will be a very good test. And another
if you like,
arm wrestle.
Big men smashing into big men, which I must say I am partial to. This is the game for you.
Yeah. France play then Argentina as well, which will be interesting. Yeah. That'll be a good test for them.
It was an absolute beatdown for Ireland. That was an absolute beatdown.
So it's 54-7.
Yeah,
it was one way traffic, as you kind of expected, because it was a second team, or certainly partial second team for Ireland,
and
it was a partial second team for Italy.
I was going to say, because there's a load of players this week playing Pro 14 for Treviso who I didn't expect to walk into the team.
Yeah, it was not a full squad at all, not even close.
And how did Ulster do? Out of interest.
I think who cares this weekend?
I care
Pro 14.
Because
it's
Derby, mate. It was Ulster.
You care in terms of points, but who cares? Because
do you know the score?
We lost.
Yes, it was 10-15.
Yeah,
Ulster, big win away on the road. That
devastated. Absolutely devastated. I don't think I'll get over that anytime soon.
Let's talk about this weekend then.
Let's
pivot to next weekend.
So next weekend, before going into the main Autumn Internationals, I will mention, on the 11th, which is next Sunday, it is the first round of the World Cup repechage. So we are going to the final round.
Yes!
First round is Hong Kong playing Germany and Canada playing Kenya in each game, one after another, on the Sunday in Marseille.
Lovely.
I would suspect, although I don't actually know with any confidence, I suspect that's going to be wins for Germany and Canada.
Well, it'd be interesting. What does Germany do on Armistice Day every year? Do they have a remembrance thing of their own?
Don't know.
So that'll be interesting what they do in France.
Oh, yeah, of course. 11th.
Between, who was playing Germany, did you say? Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
So that's kind of an originally British colony. So they might have a relationship with... Remembrance Day. I'm sorry, that's just a bit of a geeky thing. I'm a bit of a World War One geek. I'm just interested in what Germany
do. You've seen one film?
No, yeah. No, what does Germany do for remembrance? Anyway, that'll be interesting. We'll see you next week on the 11th. Yes, you're right. So it looks like it's Canada's World Cup spot. To lose.
I've got to say, I have not paid as much attention to the tier twos as I should have. Do Germany have all their players?
I'm going to go with yes, although I haven't got confirmation.
And do they still have Mike Ford?
Dennis Frank is the man who will be able to tell you that.
Yes.
I think they will. Peter Hansvild will have released all the players, hopefully.
So
they've got a chance.
They have all the players, but this is the team that beat Romania two years ago, and they're coached by Mike Ford. You'd expect them to be pretty decent.
Competitive, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Which games are we watching out of interest?
So the final round is Kenya versus Germany and Hong Kong versus Canada. So assuming that Germany and Canada both win the first round, the second round is probably going to be the deciding one. So it may well be...
We're just there for a coronation.
If Canada win,
we can just watch the autumn internationals and get on it. On it, because all the games are on Sunday, aren't they?
So the games that we're going to are on the Friday.
Oh, okay. Oh, spot on.
Yeah, so what we're doing, great. Just so everyone can, you know, have a little view into our lives, into our great lives, we're flying out. We're going to watch those two games in Marseille. I've then booked the table so we can eat in the harbour area.
Superb.
Then we're going to fly out, and we're going to try and recreate...
What time are we eating, by the way? Because the second game kicks off at 8:30.
We'll work it
out. So we'll only be getting back into Marseille by 11 p.m.
I'm not going to lie. I didn't know that.
you booked like a 7 p.m. table.
Yeah, yeah. We're then going to go fly to Rome. And we're going to do our best to try and recreate the magic, which was Nice last year on the final weekend.
By the way, I've got a contact at the Italian Rugby Union to... try
excellent.
And get that sorted, and but we're gonna have to. Like, I want to know. Anyway,
we're gonna have to
watch All Blacks Ireland.
Yeah,
that can't clash. It's not a clash.
No,
that's
clash.
The week before because
we're watching All Blacks Italy.
Oh, we're watching the All Blacks. Of course, we are.
We're going to Italy All Blacks.
We're going to see Italy be the All Blacks.
I'm glad you two know exactly what's going on.
And then we're flying back just to Nice to go to Monaco.
Just leave the organisation to me, chaps. I'll sort everything out.
All right, fine.
You two just show up. Manchester Airport on the Friday morning.
With Tweed.
Yes.
Utterly clueless, all of us.
Come on then.
Right, the rest of the international. So there are a few kind of midweek games. Canada play Coventry as a warm-up game. Uruguay play Cardiff Blues, followed by playing Ulster a few days later. Russia play Namibia. And then we get into the main action. So Italy host Georgia. Which will be a very interesting
test.
That's
very interesting.
Yeah. So Italy will have a full-strength squad out.
Yeah.
Georgia will be targeting this.
Big time.
If Georgia want to compete on the top table, if they want to be considered for a Six Nations spot, which they very much do, a win here, win in Italy, would be amazing for them.
Yeah, that's a huge one.
Yeah. Then we've got Scotland-Fiji, which I think we'll see probably the best Scotland will be mostly full strength apart from injured players like Stuart Hogg.
If Fiji could have every available player out playing for them,
every
it's a pretty frightening
Fiji
team.
Fiji qualified player would be even better.
Yeah. Yeah, well, not Fiji. Every, originally Fiji qualified player, including all those who are playing for France or England, like Nathan Hughes and Rocco Degouni.
And fucking a singer.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Naya Ovoro. Multiple French wingers.
Mm.
Vakatawa. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, so what else have we got of the lesser games? So we've got Tonga playing the French Barbarians in Bordeaux. We have United States playing against Samoa in San Sebastian.
Oh, why don't we go to that
which
one?
Which will be interesting. That'll be good. Chile play against the South American 15. Brazil play the Maori All Blacks. And given the Maori All Blacks hammered USA with three men down, and given that New Zealand proper have taken a 46-man squad, or certainly took a 46-man squad, it's an even more untried and untested All Black team. But that might still be a huge beatdown for Brazil. And then we're into the proper games. So, England host New Zealand. Predictions,
right. God, you know, I'm sort of... It's weird. I'm sort of erring towards England a little bit.
What?
What?
Well,
wow.
You.
I just think about the losses New Zealand have, right? And I think about all the England teams that have beaten New Zealand at Twickenham or run them damn close. And for whatever reason it is, I mean, you know, I even remember like Jamie Noone scoring against New Zealand. That's a thing that happened. Like Johnny May found some absolute magic. I think Stuart Lancaster's team beat New Zealand.
I think the Johnny May magic was in the game that England didn't win.
But England always seemed to be...
2012 was the last win at Twickenham, I think.
Yeah, that was Manu.
Yeah.
Was it Manu and Brad Barrett playing in the centres?
Was it? And they're still the best centre combination now. Amazing. So, I do expect New Zealand to win, but I don't think it's going to be maybe the points tally that I thought it was going to be against South Africa. When I was wrong about that too. So New Zealand, but maybe not by 40, maybe more by 15.
So you're still a bit of a beatdown.
So 15. You started that prediction with.
I'm
favouring England now.
I'm favouring
because
more,
they're not going to lose by
relatively. Yeah. Because I've got a fairly low opinion of the current setup, but you know, yeah, 15. I think if they get within 15, they've done really well.
I think the scoreline you're probably not going to. I think New Zealand will win this by 2 tries.
Yeah.
I think if England play anything like what they did in the first half against South Africa, New Zealand won't miss those lineouts. They won't knock on when they get in the 22. They will convert. A very high percentage of those opportunities into points.
Oh, by the way, yeah, that's a good point. What would happen if you gave New Zealand all that territory?
Oh, it would have been ball. It would have been 20 points at half time.
Yeah,
New Zealand would have been up comfortably.
But I don't think that's going to be the same situation. I just have a feeling England will up their game a bit.
New Zealand by 9, something like. Ah, oh, no, because I can see New Zealand getting more than. No, I think New Zealand will be held. Here's what I say. I think New Zealand are going to be held to around about 30 points, which will actually be a good effort, and England will get 1 try and a few pens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, done. I think you're probably about right. Yeah, 30 points to 18.
Something like that.
Feels about right to me. I think if England, what England need to do is show the grit and determination that they showed for extended periods inside their 22 in defence. They need to show that right across the pitch for much longer periods. If they do that, they can suffocate New Zealand and force them into a difficult position like when New Zealand lost to South Africa over the summer. I don't think that's likely, though. So, yeah, New Zealand by 12 points.
Mm.
Other games, Wales against Australia. So Wales, who
Wales,
haven't,
give me Wales.
They've never beaten them.
They've not beaten them for more than 10 years and more than a dozen attempts.
This has got to be the one.
It has
to
be.
Roll the dice enough times.
It has to be. If Wales want to be contenders, this is it. They have to win this.
So yep. Wales are looking decent. They've got a lot of their players available. Australia, not particularly impressive during the Rugby Championship. This is the one. Wales have to win this.
Agreed.
For the good of Wales, a mental thing for them going into the World Cup next year, if they've still got this enormous Australian monkey on their backs and they're in the same pool as Australia, then it's not a good look.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They have to. Yeah, they will do it. That's what I'm saying.
I think they will. I think this will be the one. Then we've got Ireland hosting Argentina, which will be...
Argentina, okay.
An interesting... So Ireland have got the 2015 World Cup monkey on their backs that they've got to get over.
God, yeah, you forget about that.
That was such a phenomenal performance by Argentina, and such an underwhelming, in difficult circumstances because of multiple injuries, but such an underwhelming performance by Ireland. I think Ireland are going to win comfortably.
Agreed.
I think a 15-point win for Ireland in Dublin. And we also have France hosting South Africa, which, as you said before, JB, this is going to be lots of big men smashing into lots of big men.
Love it. Love it. And it'll be played late at night, I hope, about 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock?
9 o'clock Central European time kickoff, so it'll be 5 past 8.
Yes!
English time or British time, GMT time.
I'll be getting nice and drunk at that point in Toc H, but man. Perfect.
So you can really enjoy it.
Yeah. And I can chew everyone's ear off about, you know, what they're doing and, you know, collisions and that sort of thing.
No, I actually think so. If France are going to win the Six Nations, like you have predicted, JB, France need to win. I actually think France are going to get a bit of a beatdown.
It's hard to say, isn't it?
South Africa will bounce back. They will get Faf and Willie LaRue.
Do they?
It was only for this first weekend, which was outside of the World Rugby Test window.
I had a feeling that they weren't going to take those players. I thought they had a deal.
No.
I think, as far as I'm aware, they're available in camp.
Right, there you go.
Vincent Koshkok, for example, who played against Sale because of a shortage of tight end. He'll be available.
They signed some Hurricanes prop.
Yes. Yeah. Don't know much about him.
No.
Oh. Yeah. So, yeah, I think France need this. South Africa probably need this even more. So I think South Africa are going to win.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to that one. That's probably my pick. Mm.
England, New Zealand.
No, I prefer to watch France, South Africa.
The closer game will be France, South Africa, with Nigel Owens officiating as well.
That'll be a good game.
Oh, he's going to let the boys play.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes!
There you go.
There we are. And there are some Premiership Cup matches.
They are happening, yes.
They are happening. I'll be at Leicester and Wasps.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
It's nice to see that they're taking their A team to the Premiership Cup.
BT Sport, that is.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Right. Well, thank you very much for listening. You know where to find us on all the usual channels. And tune in next time. Are we going to do any sort of like midweek preview, potentially?
Maybe.
We'll see what stories have come out in the meantime.
Yeah, we'll play it by ear. Because the problem is, it'd be nice to do a preview pod once the teams are announced, but that will be relevant for one day.
So we'd get
the teams on Thursday, and you have one day to enjoy that possible pod. So,
potentially a 10-minute quick one at some point. Anyway,
yeah.
Point is, thanks for listening, and keep at it. Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.